Everything was going great, right up until the moment it wasn't. Hey, everybody. This is Bonnie Somerville. Welcome to my podcast. This is Second Act on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm so excited to be here. I have been wanting to do this for years, and finally, it's happening. Thank you so much for joining me. I wanted to tell you basically a little bit about what Second Act is and kind of what it means to me and how I got the idea to do it. So I've been in my business 25-ish years and started working really young. I was a model when I was 18. I lived in Europe. I had a record deal when I was 17, lived in Nashville for a while, got dropped, came back, went to college for a bit, dropped out, decided, you know what, I'm going to LA. I'm going to make it as an actress. And 4 years of struggling, you know, not that bad. I basically was on the biggest show in the world, Friends, and, life just kept giving me good stuff. I mean, I just couldn't not get a job. It was all good. I got another record deal with Interscope. I was in a band called Band From TV, which you might have heard of, with a bunch of celebrities for charity, and traveled the world, movies, did all sorts of things. And I was really on top for a really, really long time. And then a lot of things happened. Life stuff, depression, family issues, breakups, things not working out the way you want, just disappointment, and I literally just came crashing down. Like, I just hit rock bottom. And I was on a big show and I got let go. And that was kind of the ice that broke the camel's back. Is it the ice? It's the straw. It's the ice or the straw? No, it's the straw. Whatever. Anyway, my back was broken. I mean, I just hit rock bottom. I got really depressed. I gained a bunch of weight. I kind of stopped caring. Went back to therapy and went home to New York for a while. And I just totally lost my mojo. I think all the years of disappointment and canceled shows and shows I tried to pitch that didn't work, and, you know, two record deals that didn't work, and got fired from that band I was in, the celebrity band. That's another story I'll tell someday. But it was just one hit after another, you know? And I was really down. Lucky I had really good friends around me and a lot of support. My mom was amazing. And I also left my management team of 20 years. And that was very, very hard because they were like family to me. And I felt I needed a change. And it was like a divorce. Maybe worse than a divorce because we were like sisters. So one of my best friends said, you know what, Bon, you just need to find your second act. You know, like, everyone has one. You just got to look for something. Find something else that you're good at. And I thought, that's so interesting. And one of the things I'm obsessed with is I'm a huge Howard Stern fanatic. I mean, I can't live without Howard Stern. It's on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I love the format of talking to people. I love when people open up and share their stories. I'm really big on that. I find it fascinating, especially when people are super honest. And I thought, I could do that. You know, talk to people about, how did you find your second act when everything went bad? You know, when you got fired, when your company went under, when you got a divorce, when your husband cheated on you, when you lost a child, when you couldn't get pregnant after 10 rounds of IVF, when you broke a leg and you couldn't play in a professional team anymore. I mean, we all have so many stories, and those stories are inspiring and they help other people, and they helped me a lot. All those stories I heard about, you know, Oprah Winfrey getting fired and Steve Jobs not graduating from high school and all the people that were told no, those are the stories that have kind of gotten me through my life because I didn't come from a place where people were very supportive of what I wanted to do. So I thought, I want to do that. I want to tell these stories and hear people's stories. So this is my second act, and this is just the beginning. Just the beginning of me getting back my mojo, acting, writing, producing, pitching shows. And this has inspired me to do that. And hearing these stories, hopefully, will inspire you to do that. So before I forget, please find me on Instagram and contact me at secondact_pod on Instagram. And please send me some messages. You know, I would love to hear from you guys, questions about me, my life, how I got to where I got to, any advice I could give you. And maybe have some questions about guests, and I'll start to read them when I get them, if they come in early, when you see who the guest is as we go on, I'll ask them questions. And make sure to subscribe to Second Act wherever you get your podcasts, share it on all your social channels, and please leave me a 5-star review on Apple, because I want to interview some really big people, so I need those 5 stars. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. I think you're going to love it. My very first guest is important to me because I have known this guy over 15 years, very close with his wife. I am godmother to both of his little girls, which I don't understand why. I think they think I have more money than I do. They'll be disappointed. But I've known Christian a super long time. He is an awesome friend. He's a comedian. He's a writer. He's a producer. He's a movie reviewer. He's a critic. He's a dad. He's a husband. He does it all. And I've known Christian and watched him build a brand from absolutely nothing called The Schmoes. It was him and his partner, Mark Ellis, in their rooms doing a podcast before podcasts were a thing and just talking about movies and their passion for movies. And they were so driven and so focused because they realized, like, if we can't be in movies, we love movies. So we're going to talk about them. And they have grown this to a huge social media presence, and they have a group called Schmodown. Basically, it's a trivia contest. It's gone all over the country now. People pay to be in it to compete against each other. Kind of like the, I'll let him explain it, but it's kind of like the WWF meets movie trivia. Anyway, my name in the Schmodown is Smoke Show Somerville. Yeah, I didn't write that, by the way. He's awesome. He really inspired me, and he told me to do this years ago, and he helped me a lot. He kept saying, you should do a podcast. You talk more than anybody, and you love Howard Stern. You'd be great at it. So he's probably going to say, I told you so. I wouldn't doubt it, but he was there for me, and I'm thrilled that he's my very first guest. It's coming full circle. So please welcome Christian Harloff. I can't even believe this. I'm very excited. This is one of my closest friends. I'm godmother to both his children. God help him. I don't know why he did that. I think he thinks I'm rich. I'm not. But I was a bridesmaid at his wedding, and I was the first podcast. His show was the first podcast I ever did. He's one of the funniest people, most talented, funniest people I know. Christian Harloff, hi.
I thought you were going to say Mark Ellis.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
No, you are one of the funniest people I know. Are you kidding me?
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
By the way, this is very weird because I have been on Christian's various shows. He's had many for 15 years, and now he's on mine. I'm kind of sweating a little bit.
You know, I'm judging.
You are so judging me right now.
No, I'm not judging you.
No, you are, because you're the best interviewer. Yeah. You're totally judging everything I say. You're going to judge me.
No, that's not true. I'm just waiting for you to put on headphones.
I don't have headphones, you fucker. How about the fact that, like, literally, I was one of the first guests you ever had.
Yeah.
What, 15 years ago?
When did we do it? We did the 2000, actually, no, I think it was 2009, 2010 is when we started.
Nine.
You know what? No, it's not true. Ellis and I started doing our long form podcast in, like, yeah, 2011. So I was like, what, 9 years ago? Diana, you were definitely one of the first.
Sure. You were in your apartment. There was, like, a fan. There were a couple of posters on the wall. I don't think you were engaged yet. Were you engaged yet?
It was right before we were married, but it was before firstborn was here yet.
And I just think the audience should know that both his children are my godchildren.
Yes.
I don't know why you never say that. Why do you not think that's a big deal? I think that's a really big deal.
Because it's not what your credits include, my godchildren.
Meanwhile, the only reason why you asked me was because I'm the only, like, confirmed Catholic chick you guys know.
That's not untrue.
And you think I have a lot of royalties.
The goal is that once because you're gonna crush it on Blue Bloods have been, and once that happens again, then you can donate some stuff towards the kids' college.
I mean, I could donate some blood.
No.
Not any money.
No one's to donate blood right now. Who wants to do that?
I don't know. What is going on? By the way, speaking of which, I was super offended that I stopped being on your show. Good. If you guys haven't watched Christian's show or heard of Christian's show, which you're living under a rock, SEN Live, but, like, I was, like, really offended. Why am I not on the show? And you kept saying, I'm not on the show because what? Zoom problems and.
Well, there was a lot of Zoom problems, but there was, but we did figure out a little bit more now. But it's also because the honest answer to that question is that the way that it has shifted when we're in studio, it's I prefer, because I've gone through so many bounces, gone back and forth of this space that I'm in, but I prefer not to do just movie talk and movie news and all that kind of stuff.
No, you don't. You do every. You have evolved. Like we'll go into that later. But you have literally evolved, like since I met you, into so. You've inspired me so many things.
But we did. We did that when we were in studio together. It was easier to just kind of pivot a little bit and say, okay, well, we're done talking about movie news. On the online right now, it's been a lot of movie news and a lot of those types of things. And I know that doesn't really interest you as much. What? I know you're talking about, but you're not as caught up.
Movie news doesn't interest me?
You're caught up in all that stuff?
So insulted.
Good.
What are you trying to say? What are you trying to say? Just because I'm an out of work actress?
No, what I'm saying is that when it comes to my the next show,
you guys are nerds. Let's be honest. You guys.
I'm on the show now 3 times a week, maybe 2. I'm focusing on the other stuff right now that I'm not even on the show as much anymore because they like when it started. I still love movies and like watching movies, but I'm not as locked in the way that I used to be and the way that everybody else is. I'm too busy trying to grow the Schmodown right now.
Well, let's go back. We have to tell people that don't know you, which they should, but tell everybody what we're talking about. So you are like I said, one of my oldest friends, and you inspired me because back in the day, before podcasts were even a thing, before any of this was a thing, you and Mark Ellis, you had this brilliant idea, the Schmodown, your you know, stand-up comic. That's what you came out to LA for. You had this amazing idea to start like this trivia kind of, first it was live, right? It was like a live thing, right?
No, first it started as a bit like the evolution of where we started with our channel first. And it was just two guys kind of reviewing movies and talking about movies. And in the same way that you talk to somebody after, you know, you would talk to like your friend or your boyfriend or your girlfriend and just kind of BS about the movies. You know, that's what we wanted to do. And we did that for so long. And then we started going on the Adam Carolla show.
That's right. Adam Carolla. Yeah.
We started doing that. We're like, you know, we should start doing our own podcast. And we did, and you and I are both big Stern fans, you know, and I grew up with Stern. Like the whole thing, what I wanted to do was create the Howard Stern show, but in the movie space. And so we packed it with our friends and goofed around and had bits, and we started the Schmoes No Show.
But I remember going to the Schmoes No Show, and I was there when it was live.
Yeah, it was always live on the air, for sure. Like,
no, but I mean, remember when it started, when you guys were still doing stand-up. Yeah. Was that not part of the show?
Oh, no. I see what you're saying. Like doing live shows. We did it. We did a stand. So Mark and I, our background was obviously still. And Mark still.
Tell everybody your background.
Well, stand-up comedians. And we did a comedy, a stand-up comedy show in 2010 when we only. Now the channel's over like 300,000 subscribers. At the time when we were doing that show, I think we had 3,000 subscribers. So we're just doing a stand-up comedy show, a live show at this restaurant called Amalfi, which the club was called Room 5.
Oh, I used to stumble home from there.
I know, and it was like
I lived 3 blocks away.
Right around the block. I know. There was like a hundred people that you could sit in that place, and you know, I had birthday parties there and other things there, but it was a lot of fun. But we had we used to have people come in there all the time. Like Eliza would come in there and
oh my God. And everybody.
Sebastian was in there that one night.
Sebastian, by the way, I've gotten my boyfriend into Sebastian now and he's obsessed.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him at your show and literally me and your wife, actual tears going like, what is wrong with you? Well,
I've known him for a while. I mean, we both came up at the Comedy Store. So, and he's just one of the biggest comedians in the world now. But anyway, so we did our stuff there and that live show was just kind of for a goof. It wasn't really, we weren't selling tickets to the way that we didn't have the audience that we had like now. Like I wish that we could do that because we would be able to sell that show out because I used to have to push and push and push to get people in that room. It was almost like a bringer show because of just trying to
get my... It was always packed every time I went there.
Because I got friends because it became a hangout for us, but it was like friends and all this to do. There weren't really like a lot of fans in the audience. So like when you go to Schmodown events now we're selling out 500 to 1,000 to 1,500 people when we go to across the country because that there's like fans have been watching the program for years. But that all evolved.
So it started there, right? That's where it all kind of began at the Amalfi on La Brea. By the way, everybody should know in LA on La Brea between, what was it? I used to live there. God, I forgot. Third and
Beverly.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Amalfi, above an Italian restaurant.
Yeah. It didn't necessarily start there, but it was like, that was part of the evolution. And then, then we started doing the live podcast, and from the live podcast, we were doing bits, you know, and like, and I remember in 2014, we wanted to do, remember the celebrity impression game that we used to do?
Oh my God, that was so funny.
Yeah, we used to do that. We used to do a lot of different things.
You guys were doing that. I'm saying like, you guys were doing that before there were podcasts. Like I remember you guys doing that and like, just being like, what? And yeah. Here I am now, you know, trying to get on the podcast train. But you guys were doing that before there were even podcasts. Like you saw like the future in that.
It was pretty cool. I was we had Kevin Smith on the show last week and we were talking to him and he remembers like the Schmoes, yeah. You know, and how it was out there. And it was pretty cool to hear him talking about it. So
it was some of the best comedy nights of my life. I honestly like those nights that you guys were doing and yeah, the celebrity impressions and, but I just remember you being like, hey, we're doing this, movie review thing. You want to come on? And I think my very first time I was on, it was like, you hadn't seen The Princess Bride.
Not me, Mark.
Oh, Mark. And that was the beginning of our, like, you know, let's, you know, cause a war, you know, let's cause like dissension. And it was. You had that idea before anybody.
Well, yeah, it was, I think that once we got into long form, because those were the movie reviews, the movie reviews are harder to do. Not harder to do, but harder to build like any character stuff. But once you started doing the long form stuff, that was more, you know, you could have, people could be themselves and kind of, we could have the comedy and goof around. And we did that for years. And it was 2014 when we started to introduce the Schmodown. And
tell everybody what the Schmodown is, because I'm in the midst of a war with a lot of people and I'm happy to be a part of it, but I'm getting the shit beat out of me a lot. But tell everybody what you invented, the Schmodown, which is really cool.
We brought eyes and comments, which was amazing. So
tell everybody what it is though, with the wrestling stuff. I love it's
everything. So the movie Trivia Schmodown, what we wanted to do is we wanted to follow kind of a page out of esports and the way that esports had made competitive video game playing, like it's covered on ESPN and it's millions of people watch it. It makes millions of dollars. Like it's massive. And we wanted to get the stigma away from people when you say trivia, oh, like bar trivia, it's the farthest thing from bar trivia. It's like, what if the WWF and UFC and Jeopardy had a baby?
You did that because you were a big fan of WWF.
Right? It was everything. It was competitive sports. It was WWF. I was a writer for the WWE also, you know, so it was the love of wrestling. It was a love of sports. It was a love of combat sports. It was a love of kind of rankings and systems and being able to have free agency and trading and making something a full-fledged sport. Plus the fact that it combined it with my love of movies.
Right.
And we did all that. And we had a tournament in 2014, did another one in 2015. And in 2016, we began the actual league. And we took like all of the big personalities, like whether it was like Nerdist or Rotten Tomatoes or IGN, and we pitted them up against each other and did like fake news conferences and contract signings. And the fans started creating fantasy leagues. And
you literally did like the Hulk Hogan thing of movie trivia.
Yeah.
That's what you told me. Like, you got to get on board if you're going to do it. Like, you got to have a character.
Yeah. Storylines, promos. Managers and the whole thing, but combining that with actual faction points. Like, you can be on factions, you can get traded, you can decide, you can go other places, you can go to free agency. And now it's like, it's like a real thing. Like, ESPN is going to cover us.
No, it's an amazing thing. Yeah. Like you've literally, I tell you this all the time. You're so humble. You hate compliments. I'm like so proud of you. But, being that this, my show is about second act, I have to ask you this, like, what do you think was like, because you came out to LA to be a comedian, you came out to be a stand-up, that's your background, you created this like enterprise, like what do you think was like the impetus for you to like, where you were like, all right, I need to do something else. Like what was your, like what was the moment where you were like, this isn't working, I got to do something else?
Stupidity. I think.
Why?
Well, I think stupidity, I think, because like I was dating a girl in 2000 and.
Oy vey.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I think it was like 2001 and on and off, but really like.
Dating
like,
a girl, I thought you never dated anybody but Sadie.
No, before Sadie, there was someone else in there.
It was one person ever.
But the same girl that I dated when I was in Queens, when we were younger, uh-huh. Dated for like on and off for like 3.5-4 years. Then in college and we broke up and we went off our separate ways in college. And then when I went back to work for the WWE during that time, I was back and forth from Stamford, Connecticut, and I would go and be in Queens. And after I stopped that gig, her and I went to see the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. We went to see a movie together and we kind of rekindled the old flame, if you will.
Wait, what? Rekindled a romance during Jay?
Well, after that movie, it was as much as like, it was afterwards and we rekindled, and then she moved out to California and lived with me, and I had become a regular at the Comedy Store and the Improv. I was doing colleges. I was doing all that stuff. Right. And she was a girl from Queens that was not used to this life. And I would constantly get hit with, when are you going to get a real job? When are you going to do this? When are you going to do that? When are you going to do that? And I was like, well, but I am.
When are you going to get a real job?
But it's seriously. And I was like, well, but I'm making strides here. I'm getting like farther and farther up the chain at the Comedy Store. I'm doing more stuff here. I'm getting spots. Like it was hard. And it still is. It's even harder.
It's brutal. My God, being a stand-up, it's like the most brutal.
And I was going up, Bonnie, I was going up like 14 times a week. And I was able to do it. Because I would find ways to get up two times a night and go. I would go to the Comedy Store and then on a Sunday night, and then I would drive to the Improv and do a spot, or that I would do another show at that Room 5. And I was really doing a lot of stuff. But then it's the positive and the negative of it was that because of the pressure of when are you getting a job? When are you doing this? When are you doing that? And I was like, I thought this was my job. I was like, you know, I always wanted to work in film. So let me find out how to do that. And I called my buddy Trevor, who has helped me out a lot in my career. And he helped me get an internship at this company called Village Roadshow, which was, they worked with Warner Brothers. They still, you know, financiers and did finance like The Matrix and other things. And I worked there and I interned for a while. And I eventually turned that into a job, like being like an office manager for Alcon Entertainment, which did The Blind Side and a bunch of other movies.
So you became like a 9-to-5er though.
But I was trying to do both. And I essentially kind of, I put stand up to the side for a little bit because I was like, oh, hey, look, you know, I got this gig. And it wasn't anything I was happy with because I knew that while I was sitting behind this desk or office managing while I was there, I had these ideas, but they weren't listening to me or taking me serious. I was the guy that would go to the grocery store and pick up the stuff for the office. And I'm like, oh, I have an idea. Like, great. Like everybody else, you know, I'm like, okay. So this wasn't something that I really gave a crap about. And then, it was an easy job because I was able to, it wasn't too much pressure.
Yeah. Pretty
much
you're made getting paid. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you weren't creatively, like it wasn't your, I wasn't challenged, it's like me man. When I was waiting tables, it wasn't, you know, I did it because I had to do it.
No. And I had, and I thought that I was making, you know, the girl happy at the time. And I was like, this isn't me. This is not, I don't really do this for people. And then I'm like, what? And so I was feeling like I was getting something out of the internship though. It was a lot of knowledge, and that eventually turned into an interview with Joel Silver's company.
Oh, right. I remember that's when I think I met you right around the Joel Silver.
Right after I left.
Yes.
So I met you in 2008. I had been gone from Joel Silver's company for about a year after I met you. But when I got in there though, I was, when I got the first interview, it was like the end of 2004 was when that girl and I broke up.
Oh.
And she moved back to New York. And then I kind of went just full on. I told myself, I'm just focusing on me now.
So do you think that was your, was that your, like, literally, was that the break of your second act? If, would you say that out here?
Yeah, because it turned everything around in general. Like it, right.
Well, that happened to me too. Like, yeah, like something like traumatic. Like it's, it just, it breaks you or makes you, you know?
It had to, because like it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, well, I'm not making decisions right now for anybody but myself. Now, obviously eventually that changed, but not.
Right. And you're like, this isn't the girl I'm going to marry. So now what?
So then I got that interview, you know, and I got a second interview, and then I got a third interview, and then I got the job working at Silver, and I met a lot of people there. I met my friend, one of my godfathers, by the way, who you met, David Gambino.
Oh, yes.
So Gambino. And
I like to say David Gambino. I don't think you could say David Gambino like David Gambino. Fair. You got to say David Gambino.
Well, yeah, and then he breaks your legs if you say it the wrong way. Yeah, no, but
he's... That'll break my freaking legs.
Lovely wife, Lori, who I've been friends with now for 15 some odd years. And then Eric Olson and Naveed McElarge, Ethan Irwin, who is competes in my
league. So working at Joel, like that, Joel Silver, like that gave you all of these
friends
that supported you to go and do this crazy thing, which, by the way, absolutely insane. Like, you and Mark went off on your own and were like, all right, we're going to do this like schmoes, no movie trivia podcast. Like, nobody was doing that. Like, that's pretty ballsy.
Well, it takes more confidence. And I think that was the thing when I was at, because, you know, Joel Silver's company was college for me. Yeah. I learned the business. I met another ex-girlfriend while I was there. You know, I was like,
how many ex-girlfriends do you have?
But you know her. And like, Katie. And
Katie, that's when everyone compares me to.
But that's when I was at Silver and I was there. And like, but again, she, regardless, her and I became like, we're still very good friends.
It's so funny because you said college, like when I interviewed Jesse Bochco, I asked him, what was your second act? And he said, because when I worked on NYPD Blue, he had just been promoted. And he said, kind of similar to what you said, he went, I actually look at that as, what did he say? Like school? Yeah. He said school. He said, that was school. Like, cause he had just gotten promoted and he had been, you know, his dad's son, and he had to do every job and nobody took him seriously. And that was the year that they were like, all right, like, show us what you can do. And he said a similar thing. He went, I look at that as like school.
Right. Yeah. That's what it was. And I learned, I didn't know a lot about a lot of the etiquette, the way that it worked, or development. I mean, the business is very different now than it was in 2005. But I mean, I learned about how the studio worked, the structure heads, like the difference between like the production companies on a lot, a production deal, turnaround, all these things and terminology that I kind of learned, people that I'm still friends with and that I'm still making business decisions with to this day. But because of that, but inside of that, it also made me realize, because I was single. I mean, I was living with Adam, my buddy Adam at the time, and who also started working there. So we're both working at Silver Pictures together. We lived together, and I'm like, all right, so I'm not really answering to anyone but myself. And now I have no excuses. So even though I'm working from 9 o'clock until like 7 o'clock at this company, what is stopping me then from driving to Burbank and then driving straight to the Comedy Store and start doing comedy again?
Let me ask you a question. When you were like doing the comedy thing and you were like working a 9 to 5, still doing the comedy, break up with the girl, what am I doing? What happened in your brain where you were like, you know what? I have this idea. Like, cause you and Mark went out and like badass. I mean, I so respect you. Like, you created the schmoes, no thing. Like, what happened that you had the guts to go, you know what? I'm going to start a movie trivia, group that has now grown to like hundreds of thousands of people that I'm a part of and I love it. But like, what was the impetus that you thought, I think I could do something else? I'm just curious. Cause like, that's to me, like, how do you have the, like, I want people to know, like, how do you have the guts when you're failing at something to go, I can make something else out of this?
It's not as easy as to say, like, you know, just have the guts for it, because it depends on where you are in your life. Right. And like I said, like at the time in my life, I was single. Right. I was not answering to anyone.
Young, by the way, let's stress. You
know, I was
young.
Yeah, I was young. It's absolutely true. And then I, like I said, I would say to myself, because at the, like today, if I said to myself, like, do I still have the desire, and do I feel like a junkie? Sometimes when, no. when I want to do stand up comedy, yes. And but it's not as easy. Like when I was living by myself, yeah. And I didn't have, and if I had the urge to go to the stand up comedy club and didn't do it, it's because I was lazy and I should have gotten off my ass and go and do it.
I say that all the time to the actresses I mentor. I'm like, if I could have that 22 year old, like move to LA with $500, move to Venice by myself, you know, that got me to like, I just had this,
well, you know, innate, that, yeah.
It's like learning to ski. Like when you're a kid, you have zero fear, but like try to teach a 45 year old to ski. Forget it.
Well, then break your neck.
Yeah, forget it.
But the thing was, you know, even then, you know, I worked at Silver for about 2 years in development. I had gotten an offer to bump up and become a creative executive. And at the same time, I said, I don't want to do this anymore because
you turned down that, like you had a money job.
Well, it was a start to a money job because it was the CEB. So the thing was, I had gotten these two writers. I found these two writers that took on a studio project. And then I got another movie that they picked up in the Warner Brothers greenlit. So they were going to offer me a boost because I had found these projects. And I said, I don't want to do this. It's, I felt like I loved movies and I was working in movies.
But you weren't creatively, like you weren't able to be, I mean, I know what that's like. I mean, you and I talk, like you're one of my closest friends. Like how many jobs have I done where you know I suck it up and I'm like, I'm not creatively fulfilled at all, but God forbid I complain because it pays my bills for 2 years, but like I'm dying inside.
And that's kind of how I felt, you know? And then I said, but I was like, okay, so what I need to do, what I did was I raised money. I wrote a script and it was a television script and we shot a pilot and we shot it and it was called Grasping at Straws. And it was about a comedian kind of, and it was really a lot of fun. And that was actually where Mark Ellis was on the show and he was in between takes, him and I would be goofing around. And on that, I realized that he and I had a good chemistry together, but you know, that pilot that we shot, I was very proud of, but it just happened right in the middle of the writer's strike and it did nothing.
Oh my God, tell me about it.
Yeah. So it was one of those things, but what it did was it allowed me to realize that I had a pretty good relationship there with Ellis. My friend, I don't know if you've ever heard the stories. There was this woman who was she was Winkleman's ex-girlfriend and she was,
Winkleman. Why are you saying Winkleman? Like the fans know who Winkleman is.
My friend, Adam Winkleman,
your college roommate.
No, he was
I dated. That's how I know you.
Oh, you know me, but he,
just get it out there. Yeah. Yeah.
He was, where are we going? So you cut me off. Where are we going?
Oh, sorry.
I don't know where we're going with that.
I don't know where you're going. You met Mark Ellis.
Oh yeah. And then, so Ellis, oh, Martini was the girl. Oh, yes. Martinique was her name. And she was working in San Francisco at one point, and she was working for Al Gore's network called Current TV. And so Current TV was basically taking people and looking for them to review television pilots through like flip phones and all these things. And
this is razor phones,
these little like mini cameras or whatever they were. And so Ellis and I did it. And there was like, I don't know, 12 to 15 other people that did it. And they liked us the best. And we started reviewing TV shows and movies and stuff for them. And eventually that evolved into us starting our own YouTube channel in 2008. And we called it Schmoes Know.
That's where I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
2008, we got to Schmoes Know. All right, here we go.
Well, that's where it started. It started with reviewing, and it went from being, you know,
100. It started with like reviewing. You guys were just being comedians and reviewing movies, but it was like really you guys just being like hysterically funny and reviewing movies, right? That's how it started.
It was just quick 3-minute reviews with some bits in between it, and then what we realized is people started watching it, and then because of those studio contacts that I had made. Right. Through the Silver job, I was able to find out who to talk to in publicity to try to find us to get to see movies early so we could get the reviews out early and beat anybody else that was putting reviews out there. And we started doing that for a while. And we did it. And I remember the first screening that we ever got to as like actual invited as critics was True Grit with True Grit. The remake. Yeah. And I remember seeing that and Ellis and I going, oh, wow, we got invited to our first screening, and then Leonard Maltin was at one of the screenings, and I remember us looking at each other going, we're not supposed to be here.
Leonard Maltin, you're like, I'm not worthy.
He's a legend. And then fast forward that he's competed now in the Schmodown, which is amazing. He was at one of the coolest moments. We did a live event in Los Angeles. There was like 600 people in the crowd. Wow. And right before the main event, we were calling out all the people that were in there, like the big Schmodown personalities. But then Leonard Maltin was there one night, him and his lovely daughter, Jesse. And we said, ladies and gentlemen, the Maltins are here, Jesse and Leonard. And it was like Mike Tyson showed up. The place went crazy. We got a standing ovation.
You mean someone got their ear bit off?
Yes. And Leonard Maltin jumped over the railing and bit somebody.
Blows right by my jokes. Right by my jokes.
No,
right
it was, my it jokes, was adding to your joke. I was adding to it. See? Uh-huh. Adding
right,
to
don't edit my joke. Don't edit my joke.
Adding.
All right, go ahead.
This is how Abbott and Costello started. They would have been
Abbott
done.
Abbott and who?
Costello,
you have a stroke?
Yeah, I think you
so
did.
So basically, like, ideally, every project is creatively fulfilling. Wait, let me ask you. So every project, it's like creatively fulfilling and financially rewarding. And if it can't be both, then it better be like one or the other, right? Like, is that how you feel?
Yeah, I mean, if you have to, it's just a matter of what's more important, I think, because then you get bored eventually and you try to show up for both of those things.
So what do you do if like, what do you do now? Like, cause now you've grown this into like an empire, which I'm so proud of you. Like literally, Christian, I tell everybody, like, I'm so proud. Like you have grown this to like an empire and you've got, it's like the Schmoes Know has become a league and it's amazing and it's comedy and you discover comedians and you give comedians a chance that might not have a chance. And, you know, hacks like me that used to be somebody on television and, you know, give them a break.
I read that article about you and Blue Bloods too. It's awesome.
Oh, that was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I was a little surprised.
It's a good shot. I like that. So what's going on?
You've always been like one of my biggest fans and you've always told me like never to give up and you've supported me when I've been like absolutely down, depressed. And, but like you are somebody I've always admired. Like you just have never given up. You have just been like, I am the prize. Like, just, you know, this is my goal. This is what I want. Like, and I'm like, what do you think? Like, what would you tell people like that things fail and their first chance fails and their second chance fails and their stand up fails? And, you know, like me, like so many shows, you've always had the best advice for me. You've always been like, you should be doing this. You should be doing that. And you've always been like super progressive. You know, you were like, you need to be doing YouTube before anybody else. You need to be doing Instagram before anybody else. Like what would your advice to be for people like that? Like right now, like, cause you've had so many acts, you know?
Well, I think that the main thing is that you have to, it's cliche, but you have to believe in yourself. That's the,
really? I'm crying right now. I'm weeping.
But isn't it true? I mean, if you don't believe in yourself, then if you don't believe in yourself, no one else certainly is going to.
I believed in myself a million times when, you know, shows were canceled and I've been down on my luck. And you've told me like, you know, Bonnie, you know, get up and like get on Instagram and reinvent yourself. And I didn't listen to you for a long, long time, you know, and now I'm trying.
But you did it. But that doesn't mean that you didn't believe in yourself. That just means that you just did it in different ways because you're a very talented actress. So you wanted to make sure that you were able to say, okay, I do. Just because I said, hey, you should be doing podcasting and other things and reinvent yourself and you didn't do it, doesn't mean you didn't believe in yourself. It just means that you wanted to make, I mean, I think it means the opposite. It means the fact that you kept pushing and you got yourself Golden Boy and you did.
Yeah,
you did,
but I didn't, I'm guilty of, like I told people, like I'm guilty of, you know, you've always had that motivation that I admire. Like you never, ever have like taken a day off. And I admit this and I'm not ashamed of it. I admit that I've taken days off and I've kind of lost my way and gained weight or, you know, didn't, you know, focus on the wrong things. Like, and I admit that because like, why not be honest? But you are somebody that's always been like, I am the prize the whole time.
Yeah. But that's only because I feel like I still haven't gotten even remotely close to the prize. I think you've hit the prize a couple of different times. Yeah. But it's like, you know, I always feel like, it's not even
you're close. Very motivated though. Have you ever like felt in your life you lost that motivation ever?
Like during that time I told you, like for when, you know, like I had stopped doing stand up. I was just got an internship to make someone happy. And I was just kind of laying around smoking pot, watching Yankee games while my.
So you think that breakup, like, so that was in hindsight.
Yeah, it changed everything. It was the best.
So when everything. Did you, like, how did you get back on your feet after that?
It was pretty quick because, like I said, whether it's selfish or not, I said, I'm not doing anything for anyone else except myself right now. I'm going to focus in on this. I didn't have any other responsibilities to anybody but myself. And then I also told myself I wasn't going to get into a relationship again. I wasn't going to get married. I wasn't going to do this. I wasn't going to have kids. I wasn't going to do all that. That's what I told myself anyway.
Did you have like a date? Like when you met Sadie, we were like, oh shit.
Yeah, I mean, I was
single. Sadie is his wife. She's one of my closest friends. I can say this because I was a bridesmaid. I say this. I love you, Sadie.
But but Sadie and I talk about all the time that I was at
you
that.
You're ready. You're ready.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't at that point. When I met Sadie, it was, I told her, come to one of my shows. And she's like, what, come on one of your shows?
I love this story. She's like, who that faggot? I'm not going to his comedy show.
That's what I do. I wasn't looking for relationships or dates. And I would go and I would, and you know, and I dated comedians and actresses and whatever it was, but I wasn't looking for anything. And then I just but through stand-up comedy is where I met my wife. Because
right. she honestly, I have to say this, like, you got to meet someone that like is truly a real fan and loves you for you, because otherwise it'll never work. And she really was a big fan. You got to have that when you're an artist.
It's true. She wasn't, it was just a,
she loved you from like the get-go. She told me she thought you were hysterical.
Yeah. Well, we both didn't take each other's crap, which was good too. And it was like, man, we just vibed with each other. And it was, yeah, I don't know. I think eventually, because even the beginning of our relationship with her and I was kind of trying to convince myself I didn't want to be in a relationship. And I tried to find a way out stupidly and then realized, what are you doing? This is dumb. And then, you know, fast forward 10 years.
So when you were with Sadie and like, as she was with you with how it's grown, Schmoes and SCN, like was there ever a moment where you were like, oh, this is the right thing, or did you just know right away?
I think that it was, you know, I knew that I liked being with her. I knew that I liked seeing her more often. then I realized
she's not hard on the eyes, you know.
She's not hard on the eyes. And then I realized at one point I was like, okay, this is kind of like, This is when I knew that my wife is she's a shit or get off the pot type of woman. You know what
I mean?
She is
as a friend of mine, I can say she is one of those people that is very supportive.
Yeah.
And like with me, she's always been like, all the years she's been like, Bonnie, you're an amazing actress. You're going to, like, she is one of those, like,
she's honest and real. She's,
I believe, honest in you type of person, you know?
She's no bullshit. Yeah. She's honest. Yeah. She's real. And she's about the most, like, she's just a very, like, loyal, genuine person. And that's what, but she told me, I remember we were sitting around. She's like, look, because I told her, we had the marriage conversation earlier into the relationship. And I remember her telling me where she was like,
oh, I remember the night. I remember the whole engagement night. I mean, I was part of the whole thing.
That was after when I was locked in. When we first started dating, locked in. She said to me, she goes, she's like, you know, talking about marriage. And I said, I don't really believe in marriage per se. I believe in like longer relationships, but marriage, I think it's just a piece of paper, is what I said to her. She said, that's wonderful, but I do believe in marriage. So if you don't, then I understand, but maybe we should call it a day.
So do you think like part of your act, like let's say, okay, going back to the second act and third act, like that relationship is a big part of like your third act or your fourth, whatever you want to call it, right?
Easily, because it's like there's that, because of what I just said, how I kind of progressed into wanting to appease someone and then not wanting to, and then just acting for myself. Right. But right. then I went into the mode of, okay, someone telling you, I understand if you don't want to not be selfish anymore, but I'm asking you that you can't be anymore. So right. if you're cool with right. that, then let's do it. But if not, then you need to move on. And I chose that she was worth it. And I'm glad that I did because, you know, fast forward 10 years later, I have two beautiful
little nuggets.
And my wife is like one of the best things that ever happened to me. So yeah.
So wait, let me ask you a question. So just like, all right. So how similar do you think SEN Schmodown like or different is now than what you thought it would be years ago? Is it similar or different or like how? Like, well, what do you
mean? Yeah. I mean, Schmoes Know just turned from two guys reviewing movies, and now it's turned into a
war path where I get attacked on Twitter and told like, you're not hot. Who do you think you are?
No one said you're not hot. I didn't see any of those comments.
Nobody said I'm not
hot.
No
one said that. Your entrance is going to be nominated for Entrance of the Year.
Let me say something. My entrance is all Dave, all my boyfriend. I told you what he said. He's like you. He went, you better throw your fastball and stop messing around.
Wrong. I mean, that again, the amount of comments and everything else. Yeah.
He said what you said. He's like, stop with the sky photos. I told him what you said. He was like, stop it.
Yeah. Enough. It's just
listen to my accent now. Why am I talking like this? What's going on?
Your Instagram has improved 1,000% since you started dating Dave. I'll tell you that right now.
My life has improved 1,000% since I started dating Dave.
Gardening now? You want to send me some basil?
I'm gardening. Oh my God, the basil. You won't even believe it. All right. Anyway. Good. All right. Listen, now I got to get serious. All right. I got to ask you 5 questions. All right. So who do you think?
Ralph Biscuits. No.
All right. Who do you think was the best extra in all of the Spider-Man franchises? Go.
Brett Sheridan. No, you.
How dare you?
The Great Scream. The Great Scream. I think I talked to you about that on SNL.
Screaming Woman from Spider-Man 2 is one of my greatest achievements of all time.
And you said Sam Raimi was in the room, right? He directed you in that shot?
Who? First of all, who's Sam Raimi? Where are you from?
You know, you didn't work with Sam Raimi?
Yeah, I did. Of course I did. What are you talking about? I worked on that for 3... By the way, anyone listening, you want to be an actor? Don't. 3 weeks of my life, although the residuals still come in. 3 weeks of my life, and the whole thing was cut to 20 seconds.
Wow. What was the original...
I had a whole scene. I had like a fight with a client.
Oh.
By the way, I liked that I was wearing glasses. You know, I looked like kind of cool.
Here, right. I got something for you. Here.
All right, go ahead. What?
Here it is. Thank you so much. Hold on, you got it.
What?
Can you hear that?
What? What is that? Is that my scream? You're so
well done.
She's so obnoxious. Okay. True or false, Bonnie Somerville was not in the final edit of A Star is Born because it was widely assumed she would steal the entire movie.
True.
Ah! All right. Yeah. Okay. Who pioneered the genre of ad execs who leave everything for small town Christmas tree farmers in Hallmark movies like the one I did, Love You Like Christmas?
Horatio Sanz. No?
Dave is laughing, by the way. He's over here laughing. I just snorted. Okay. Absolutely. I want you to tell the story. You have to tell the story. Your famous worst moment of being a stand-up ever. And that counts as 2 questions because it's so brilliant. Your famous story about your most embarrassing moment when you were stand-up with.
Oh, you mean the improv?
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, this story.
Yes, this counts as 3 questions.
The story goes like this. I had just kind of moved to LA. We just talked about Adam Winkleman. He brought me for my 22nd birthday, I think it was. 22nd, 21st, one of those. And we went to the improv. It was sold out. And on the stage was Rick Overton, very famous comedian inside of the in general. He's a very accomplished comedian, actor. And he had this improv group that was up on stage and they were just absolutely murdering up there. And I had a couple shots here and there.
By the way, murdering for civilians means doing well.
doing very well. So, no, they're actually just taking
killing people.
People misbehaving in
yeah,
the
with
office.
Guns and knives, yeah.
But no, they're just smashing shot glasses inside of their larynxes.
Yes, like America.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so like I remember being in the crowd and Rick Overton saying, this is the point of the show where we ask an audience member to jump up on stage if they are interested. Nobody usually does this because it's tough to do and we're going to come after you. So, and I, again, had a couple of shots and I jumped up on stage and I remember them circling me like sharks in the water. And I was just on. And they would throw a scenario and I just kept hitting the moments and the crowd would go laughter. And it got me back into stand-up comedy is what it did.
So I got to interrupt you. So for like civilians or people that want to be stand-ups, you have a couple of shots or you're an actor and someone throws you up and they go, go. They have to understand that like you either live or die in that moment. Like you either do it
listening.
Or you just go home and you...
Yeah, in improv, you have to listen. And this is like a group of very trained killers when it came to comedy. And they are throwing scenarios at me, trying to make me look stupid. And they were supposed to be doing, mind you. Like when you have someone who's just a regular civilian jumping up, you're supposed to shine. And in that moment, and I could do this 100 times and it only happened once. In that moment, I was outshining them. And I was able to do it in that moment. Now, every other moment, I'm not going to do that. And the crowd was screaming and yelling and laughing. And I just was on top of the world. I got on and Rick Overton to this day, I saw him at the Comedy Store recently, he said, you had brass balls. And he's like, that's, and we kept in touch after that. And he always gave me respect, but I get off the stage and I had this hand come up to me and tap me. And she goes, you are incredible. And I looked at her and it was Sarah Silverman. And I turn and I say, you are great in Something About Mary. She's in the movie for maybe 3 seconds. She looked at me like I had three penises on my face and then I walked away. So the stupid
you
thing.
You blew it. Listen, yeah. What does De Niro say in Goodfellas? You blew it.
I was on Bert Kreischer's show like 2 or 3 weeks ago and we talked about this and what I should have done in that moment was, oh my God, thank you. Because I'd seen her at the Boston Comedy Club. She's very established in the comedy world. What I should have said was, Sarah, this is very nice of you. Can I buy you a drink? Can I ask you like, where should I get up? Where should I go? What do you suggest? I should have picked her brain about stand-up comedy. Instead I go, oh, you agree with that movie. Bye-bye. And then I left. And like an idiot. And I never, I think I spoke to her like maybe one other time in passing, but that moment was just kind of came and went. And it's always those what if moments. Like what?
I always have those. I have so many of those.
So many of those, but it's like one of those, but that's the one that always like that. It definitely, if those going back in time moments of, hey, stupid, don't do what you just did. Let me handle this.
All right. Two more questions. And then I'm going to get, let you go. How do you think you do as a contestant in the Schmodown instead of the host? If you were up against, because you are the champion of the singles, like
no, I'm not me. I'm not Dan Merle's.
You're not.
I'm not. I don't compete anymore.
Oh, all right. How do you think you do as a contestant right now? Well, yeah, you're right. Because now it's grown.
I did killed.
You'd get killed like me, and everybody hates me. No, by the way, I did good the other time.
Yes, but do you know why? Do you know why they gave you crap?
Yes, because I still don't know the rules.
Yes.
That's why.
That
but I'm too busy wearing a bodysuit.
Oh, come on. You could have.
Good. Put them on the
you, I guarantee you that if I would have said, and especially if I would have talked to Dave, if I would have sat down and said, just make sure.
Dave's listening, by the way. He's
fine. Here. She knows the rules. She knows the repeats. I could have strangled you in what you were talking. You're in the middle of it and you go, listen. You say at the one point, what did you say? You go, can I get a repeat? Yo, come on. I've been playing
first of all. First of all, rules are for bitches. Second of all, when I get very excited, I lose my place. All right. What do we got to do to get you to go head to head against Mark? You and Mark.
We did it. We've done it already. Hey. We did it
a long time ago. Like again.
A year and a half ago.
Oh. Well, see too long. How much I watch the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the support.
Listen, I love you so much. And I'm really, thank you so much for doing this. And I really do mean this. I know you're not emotional and you hate when I get emotional, but I really look up to you and everything you've done since I've met you really inspires me. And you have always supported me. And thank you so much. Cause Look, I'm finally doing a podcast like you said I should.
I love it.
And I really do. I admire you, Christian, so much. Like, you've taken every single opportunity and turned it into something else. And like that just, I really admire that.
Well, thank you. And as the, to return that sentiment, I would say.
See, you can't be emotional. God, we can't, we're like brother and sister. God forbid. You want to fart now? Yeah, let's fart. Yeah. Okay. That's how emotional we are.
Sorry.
But I do love you. I do love your kids a lot.
Yes. Well,
so tell everybody where to follow you right now because they need to.
All right. Well, first, stop it. Come on. This is a professional show. Stop it. First place so I would say, will you stop it? So where
He's
I would
such
say
an
you.
Idiot.
Have, come on. What are you really going to set
get
me
a
up?
Burrito? Do you have what a burrito? Say,
come on, Bonnie. Is that what the basil
is? That was doing? A wet one. I got to go. Tell everybody where to follow you.
www.clownfart.net. Go to youtube.com/theschmodown. And you can find all platforms, whether the Schmodown or Instagram, the whole nine yards.
Yes. And follow Christian Herloff on Instagram. And also, you know, people out there, just like protect me because I'm getting a lot of slack as the smoke show. On Schmodown, and like I got a lot of beef, but yeah. I listened to Christian, and I and my boyfriend said, you know, throw your fastball, you know, so I did.
That's
and all
where,
I'm getting.
That's what? Not where they. That's not where you got the grief from. The grief was from what people said was it was just you. If you would have learned, if you knew the rules of the game, you would have won the match.
Rules are for see, well, then ugly don't, people.
You're not allowed to complain. If you're not allowed to complain about it, you're not allowed to complain about it.
All right. I love you, Christian, very much.
Same here.
I love your kids. And thank you so much. I'm really proud to have you on the show because, like I said, you were the first podcast I ever did. So it means a lot to me.
Good. I'm glad that you're finally doing it. You've been talking about it.
Yeah, maybe I'll see you. Maybe I'll see you sometime if we get over COVID.
I know. We'll see. We'll see whenever. God help us all.
God help us all. All right. I love you.
All right. Same here.
Thank you.
Got it.
Bye, babe. Bye. Well, that was awesome. I'm so excited that Christian was my first guest. Honestly, I have to tell you, it meant a lot to me. It's just full circle because I was on his podcast when podcasts weren't even a thing. And I just remember sitting in his room. In his room, the fan was on and it was so hot. Oh my God, it was hot as balls. It was like 100 degrees. And I was like, what is this? We were talking about The Princess Bride, which is one of my favorite movies, by the way. And he just had this vision. He had this idea. And that's not what he came out to LA to do. You know, I mean, he came out to be a stand-up. And he, you know, figured out a way to make money and do what he loves and put together this group of people that are just passionate about movies and genre movies and comedy movies and sci-fi. And he's turned it into a brand. And it's his second act, you know, and it's not his last act. It's going to have many more acts. And that's what the point of this podcast is. You know, it's like, you just never know. You can't give up. You just got to think of how you can pivot, I guess, is the best way I could think of it. How can you pivot when things are not going the way you want to go? Because we all can do it. You can do it. I could do it. We all could do it. So thank you so much for tuning in to my first podcast. I'm very proud of myself and I hope you enjoyed it. And thank you to my producer, Dave McLean. The greatest guy on the planet. And please follow me. Don't forget, follow me at secondact_pod on Instagram and follow my personal Bonds Somerville on Instagram and send me questions, send me messages. I would love to know what you thought. Any notes, you know, a lot of you think you're, you know, critics out there. So listen, bring it on. I'm prepared. Won't be the first time, but I'd love to hear from all of you. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and download and leave me a 5-star review on Apple because I really think I deserve it and I want to keep coming back. So thank you so much for tuning in. Can't wait to bring you more of these stories. And don't forget, the comeback is stronger than the setback. Bye, guys.